The next story involves a few beginners, a lot of luck, and a small, delicate creature called the island marble butterfly. Part of what makes it distinctive is this green iridescent camouflage pattern on the underside of its wing, but you're more likely to see just a flash of white cruising by you on a gust of wind.
It's maybe 2 inches across. When you just see one fly by, you see mostly white. If you look at him carefully enough and get a good search image for him, you might see a little tinge of green or orange on the hind wings, but it's pretty faint.
That kind of sighting is extremely rare. In fact, for decades, this butterfly was thought to be extinct. The last sighting had been in 1908. That's until a curious man named John Fleckenstein happened to be in the right place on the globe at the right time. 88.5 Environment reporter Bellamy Palethorpe tells us how the island marble butterfly was rediscovered and why being new to something can be a big advantage.
John Fleckenstein is a guy who likes action. Before he got interested in finding rare critters in the wild, he worked in theater. Here's how he describes what it takes to catch an island marble butterfly.
Well, they are funny flyers, and if you are trying to catch one to confirm an identification, you better be in pretty good shape because you're probably going to get some exercise. I have been lucky, taken one swing of the net and had them take a left turn when they should have taken a right and fly right into the net. But usually you have to chase them.
20 years ago, Fleckenstein was working for Washington State as a zoologist. He'd relocated from the Midwest. He was good at finding butterflies and was looking to get to know his new home in the Pacific Northwest. So he and a friend dreamed up a scheme to learn more. They decided they needed to do a systematic inventory of prairie butterflies. They set out to make a kind of catalog of all the butterflies that still called the Puget Sound home. They had both studied popular accounts from experts with descriptions of lots of different kinds of bugs that they wanted to know more about. John was really interested in the San Juan Islands, which, by the way, if you haven't been there, is kind of like paradise, with sweeping views of the Salish Sea from bluffs above sandy beaches, orca whales sometimes feeding offshore. You get the picture.
We went back out there, and we weren't finding the numbers they talked about, and even where the good prairie remnants were, we weren't finding the species diversity. So we thought there was some kind of problem. We didn't have a baseline, so Ann and I decided that we would establish whatever baseline we could.
Ann Potter still works for the state. She's a conservation biologist who specializes in insects. She wasn't actually with John in the field when he rediscovered the island marble butterfly, but if it weren't for Ann, it might not have been found. You see, John came back with lots of specimens. He didn't really know all of what he had. Two of them, which he had collected at American Camp on the south end of San Juan Island, stood out to Anne.
My thoughts were, I don't know what this is. What is this? Usually when you work in a field, you know the animals that you're working with. And when you see something that you've never seen before, you can't put it in that box. You can't identify it.
Yeah, what is this thing?
What he had brought in looked really similar to several common white butterflies found in the region.
We were confused. We had no idea what it could be. I even thought that maybe his samples were mislabeled for a while because he'd also been working in eastern Washington where there's another subspecies. We ruled that out and it just quickly became mysterious.
Anne packed up the specimens and took them to a conference of butterfly experts in Corvallis, Oregon. As soon as they saw these two little butterflies laid out in front of them, they knew they were seeing the island marble, a species which had not been noted for 100 years.
The person that I shared the information with first practically had to scrape him off the ceiling. He was so blown away by seeing this butterfly that the general thinking was that it was extinct.
I was working in the yard that afternoon, and I thought I heard some screaming from Corvallis clear up to Olympia because the experts there knew right away what they were.
Now, this doesn't happen every day. John Fleckenstein had found the proverbial needle in a haystack. But the thing is, those butterflies were all out there all along. It's just that no one else took the time and effort to look for them. John says keeping an open mind and being new to things has served him very well in his career.
Every time I start looking for a new animal, I really have to convince myself that I'm a beginner and go find all of the information that I possibly can. Yeah, Ann and I were beginners with prairie butterflies generally, and then we found the island marble, and we were absolute beginners with that.
I like to cultivate the sense of being a beginner. When you think that you know something, then you're closed off to learning. And if you already think you know all the answers, then you're not going to be effective.
Do you feel lucky to have found it?
Yeah, just fabulously lucky. If I'd been 100 yards over to the east, I might not have seen it. If I'd been down at the beach, I might not have seen it.
Today, the island marble butterfly is known to exist only on the south end of San Juan Island. And the area that it flies around in totals just a few hundred acres. The actual habitat where it lays its eggs is only 5 or 10 acres, and most of that is on public land. Biologists estimate that the population in the wild recently dipped to just a few hundred. A big part of the problem, says Anne, who still surveys the area for the state, is the very dense population of deer. She's standing near the ocean with her binoculars, scanning a steep hillside for island marble butterflies. We didn't see any today. Mostly what she finds is their habitat, tall, spindly mustard plants with bright yellow tender buds, and some without them.
That plant on the right, there are no flowers on it. The plant still looks pretty healthy, but the end of every single branch or raceme that had a flower on it has been munched off. And that's where the island marbles would lay their eggs.
Today, the island marble butterfly is recognized as an endangered species. And because of its low numbers, a highly skilled workforce is paid to be like a nanny to the butterfly eggs. The biologist at American Camp, which is a National Historic Park, carefully plucks some of these eggs from the mustard blossoms before they're eaten by deer or bunnies, so that these eggs can be reared in a lab in the woods. Federal biologists watch over the eggs and study their development into caterpillars till they make their chrysalises, that's the butterfly's cocoon. Then after they emerge each spring inside mesh cages, those coddled adults are released into the wild. And all of the adult island marble butterflies only fly for about 5 or 6 days per year. And then they die. In the wild, those chrysalises can be in the landscape, invisible and vulnerable to trampling, for up to 10 months of the year. So saving them means restoring prairie habitat and protecting it from trampling. Why do we go to all this trouble for just a few hundred butterflies?
The island marble is a product of this environment. It's here because of this soil type. It's here because of this weather type. It doesn't occur anywhere else in the world. So it's kind of like a Mona Lisa that was created from this environment over thousands of years. So why wouldn't we care about this animal that is unique to this place?
Anne says whenever she's lucky enough to see one, that bright flash of spring green on its wings gives her hope for the future that one more generation has made it through.